Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Adam Cantor, and Adam is a botanist and a consulting biologist with the Table Bluff Department of Natural Resources. Adam, tell me a little bit about your background and how you got excited about botany and doing the sort of work that you do.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Jennifer. I've always loved plants, was an avid backpacker and hiker as a kid, grew up in the Appalachian Mountains, which is known for its plant biodiversity, and many times compared to the Klamath Siskiyou region, and you know, always did a lot of traveling, and traveling kind of spiked my interest in plants. I would see plants that I recognized from, you know, back in Virginia where I grew up, and then eventually made it out here, and you know, saw some familiar plants, and then familiar plants that were just giant out here, you know, like the sword fern. You know, it's a little fern back east, but out here it can be head high. So yeah, you know, hiking, just an avid nature lover.
Did you come here to go to school?
Not initially, but I ended up going to school and getting a second degree in botany here at HSU.
Oh.
So I went to Virginia Tech. Great. And got my undergrad.
Nice.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the Wiat people, because I think a lot of people don't really realize the full extent of their range. Whereabouts were the Wiat people historically?
They were definitely centered around Humboldt Bay. Their northern boundary was with the Yurok at the Little River, which is right there at Moonstone Beach, Clam Beach, pretty familiar with most people. And then it went south to around Cape Mendocino, just north of Cape Mendocino, a little not well-known creek called Oil Creek, out in the beginning of the King Range. And then its eastern border was a little wavy, I guess, but it generally went to the first ridge going east from the coast. So the lower Mad Rivers, you know, to a little bit above Blue Lake, Jacoby Creek, Freshwater, and then up to the Van Dusen confluence on the Eel River, not that far up the Van Dusen to around Hydesville.
Okay.
So that a very coastal people.
Was this because there were different bands of Wiat people living in these different areas, or was there some movement because of where some of the resources were at, like seasonal movement?
There was actually kind of three districts of Wiat territory. Badawat, which is, or Potwat, depending on how you pronounce it, is the Mad River District. And then Wiat, of course, is the Eel River District. And Humboldt Bay was called the Wiggy. And so, you know, this is, we say the Wiat people, the Wiat culture, but really it's the language. It's the region of the Wiat language is the geographic area that I spoke about. And, you know, there was definitely local, there would be seasons when the Wiat would go out to the dunes and go surf fishing, and they had huckleberry camps out on the Samoa Peninsula. And then other years, you know, other times of the year, they would, go further in on the bluffs and focus on other resources that aren't right on the beach. So not a lot of migration really within the territory. People tended to have two main either camps or villages that they would spend the year in.
Now, historically, a lot has changed for the Wiat people and for this land. Botanically, what has changed?
Well, a lot. You know, it'd be amazing to get to see what it used to look like. One of the biggest changes is pulling the Wiat's cultural burning and fire off the landscape. And we have these beautiful coastal prairies that are kind of icons of the California and the Pacific coast. And if you go out to Table Bluff, that's a good place to see some of these prairies. And there's a few that you can see around Trinidad, but the Humboldt Bay area, you know, was one of the first areas on the coast to be settled. And so, you know, both flat land, proximity to the bay, you know, the Indians basically were pulled off the land, their fire was pulled off the land, and now we're seeing encroachment, you know, of these coastal prairies with conifers and non-native species and just development.
It seems like so much also came in with the cattle and horses that were brought in, and the feed, and all these invasive species as well.
Exactly. So, you know, you may see grassland. It looks like coastal prairie, but most of the grasses, you know, were planted by settlers for pasturage. And, you know, the coastal prairies were very rich. And so one thing that happened when the pioneers came and started to till the soils is that they disrupted shallow hard pans that basically created high water tables and created these really lush coastal terrace wetlands where we have some of our really rare plants like the western lily and Indian potatoes, camas, stuff like that.
Yeah, so those Indian potatoes, I mean, I think I had just vaguely heard about Indian potatoes. That was a pretty big staple of food for people, Wiat people in Humboldt County.
Yes, yes. And Indian potato is kind of a general term for a large group of plants known as geophytes, which, you know, their main strategy is to have these underground storage organs, bulbs, tubers, corms that really, you know, help them deal with the Mediterranean climate and deal with drought. And they're really good sources of carbohydrates and were a huge staple of tribes all up and down the Pacific Northwest coast. You know, some people say that, you know, the salmon really unites, you know, the coastal peoples from Northern California up to Alaska. But, you know, some people, you know, say it should be called the Camas Nation because, you know, the Camas bulb also united these tribes. And they had developed very sophisticated methods at cultivating it. And there was pretty strict ownership even over certain plots of these bulbs. So.
I've heard before that that there's also a death camas.
There is a death camas, yes, and it has white flowers. When I hear camas, I don't even really think of the death camas. It's not super abundant around Humboldt Bay, usually occurs at higher elevations. It's common on the Mendocino Coast, but I was just reading something about it that this was in British Columbia, that the tribes would go through and actually pull the white death camas flowers so that only, you know, the purple camas was left, and so it was easily identifiable.
So just culturing out that plant that was not good to eat and could be deadly and making sure that everything that you had planted in the field was good to eat.
Yeah, and you know, weeding of Indian potato patches was pretty well documented, not so much by the Wiat, but in other parts of California. You know, Indian potatoes used to be as thick as grass, elders talk about, and the amount of harvesting was really aerating the soil to the extent that it was, you know, benefiting these plants when they were harvesting them. You know, little asexual bulblets are put out, and those were scattered during harvest, and then weeds were also pulled. So, you know, sounds like gardening to me.
Right. It sounds like agriculture. It really does. Now, you studied with Kat Anderson a bit.
Briefly, yes. I was honored. She made us a visit. I had called to ask her about this unique hazelnut scrub vegetation that found up at Table Bluff back in 2014 that just screamed out like it had been cultivated. And, you know, she picked up the phone when I called her one day and, you know, talked to her for over an hour. And she says, well, I got to make a trip. And she came up here and was sort of blown away by, you know, the remnant gardens, if you will, that are left in parts of Wiat country. We went out to Table Bluff and looked at the western lily prairie, which has a couple other Indian potatoes, and helenium, which was an edible green. And we went out to the Moelle Dunes to look at an old Indian potato garden out at the Moelle Village, and that was really special. And, you know, her main point was, you know, we just have to keep caring for these places. As botanists and biologists, we tend to have this reactionary, you know, don't step on the plants. We might hurt the plants. When in reality, you know, a lot of these cultural food plants that, you know, we associate with the coastal prairies and the local tribes, they really need to be harvested to keep, you know, to maintain their healthy population. And, of course, we're going to have to do something about the conifers encroaching as well.
This has been really interesting. I'd like to come back next week and talk some more about your relationship with Kat Anderson, who wrote Tending the Wild, and what is happening to restore some of these areas back to foods and other plants that were grown historically. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. It'd be great. There's a lot to talk about. So thanks for having me.
This program was supported in part by the Northwest California Tribal Communities Extension Program, a USDA-funded project through the University of California Cooperative Extension of Humboldt and Del Norte counties.